Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Good afternoon. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome to this edition of On Politics for November 17th. So we have a lot to talk about today. Let's get to our headlines. There are challenges ahead for both Paul Ryan and Reince Priebus, and his name is Steve Bannon. We'll talk about that. We'll remember Melvin Laird, who died on Wednesday, longtime congressman from Wisconsin and former defense secretary. Is David Clark headed to Washington? We'll talk to Dan Bice about that. There's a new plan for Milwaukee Public Schools, but it may face some opposition when the legislature comes back next year. We'll have winners and losers and your questions. But first, I'm with Dan Bice, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Mary Spacuzza, a reporter and political reporter for us. Mary, let me turn to you first. So last Sunday, Reince Priebus, head of the Republican National Committee, was named chief of staff for President-elect Donald Trump. That move, that appointment, was hailed by both Democrats and Republicans alike. He's a great organizer. He might bring some stability. But at the same time, Trump named Steve Bannon the CEO of Breitbart News, a far right-wing website, kind of known as a bomb thrower, which has attracted a pretty unsavory cast of characters reading it. And in fact, Bannon's name was listed first. So what does this mean for Priebus and for his ability to function in the White House?
I think it's one of those where the great news is that he's going to be chief of staff to the president, and the bad news is that he's going to be chief of staff to the president working with somebody like Steve Bannon. So, I think, what is it, with great power comes great responsibility. So it'll be interesting to see how he navigates really somebody who's been part of the alt-right movement. They've disputed allegations that he's a white nationalist, but certainly has a pretty strong white nationalist, neo-Nazi fan base. And so here's somebody like Reince Priebus, the hardworking guy from Kenosha, well, born in New Jersey, but of Kenosha of late. And
who's college roommates with
Robin Voss,
Senator Speaker Robin Voss.
Yeah. Right, longtime friends with Paul Ryan, who was a frequent target of Breitbart and Bannon's. Also longtime friends with Scott Walker, and they kind of all came up through the ranks as Ronald Reagan loving Gen X Republicans.
The cheesehead conservatives.
Right, the cheesehead revolution. Yeah. So that's obviously a different point that Trump is coming from, a different place that Bannon is coming from. So it'll be interesting. Speaker Voss said that Reince Priebus will be a steady hand who will be able to kind of keep Trump from, maybe going crazy on Twitter. I don't know if that's possible, but also kind of navigating his decisions and how he goes about laying out his policies. Yeah. So, I don't think that Donald Trump is necessarily a very policy wonk, detail-oriented guy.
I know, to say the least.
So it'll be interesting
he
to see.
He needs those kind of people around,
yes,
for sure.
And I think that people kind of applauded Reince Priebus for that reason, that he is a detail-oriented. He's also a true believer and a deeply conservative person, so he is, the idea that he's some kind of moderate, I would say that most people would not feel that's the case.
And the big question is, if Bannon and Priebus disagree on something, as they have apparently already in terms of appointments, then who is the main decision maker on that, particularly if Donald Trump doesn't really care, who has greater authority? And you also have Trump's son-in-law in there as well, making calls and has a great deal of contact with the president. So who has the final say? And clearly there have been some differences already and a shakeup with the team of people naming the transition team. So Yeah, I mean, this looks like it's going to be an ongoing thing. You know, I think of the Republican Party as being made up of three groups: the evangelical Christians, the Tea Party people who previously were known as the Reagan Democrats, and then the movement conservatives, the traditional conservatives. Reince comes from that group, the traditional conservatives, whereas Bannon is much more from the Tea Party group. So they have different constituencies, different agendas, and so how do they get these to fit together?
We should point out the chief of staff's position is a really powerful position in the White House. You're the gatekeeper for the Oval Office, so that's not a small thing. And Priebus has developed a relationship with Trump, as has Bannon, around the same time. So
yeah, a senior strategist is an important position, too. So they're both in important positions, and the senior strategist position isn't really well-defined. So whereas the chief of staff is the one who's the gatekeeper for the president, I mean, Bannon has access when he wants it to the president as well.
So, Dan, let me turn to you now, and let's talk about the challenge for Paul Ryan with Steve Bannon being in that job.
Well, I mean, the good thing for him is Ryan's Priebus is there, and they have a long-standing relationship. But as we found on CNN, Paul Ryan said he doesn't even know Steve Bannon at all. So so what's the relationship there going to be like? The suggestion so far is that it's going to be troubled because Bannon had sent out emails to his group of people suggesting that they should be making it a priority to get rid of Paul Ryan. The long game is to get rid of him by March or April. So, it's going to be incredibly difficult for him. And of those three groups that I talk about, Paul Ryan's very much a leader of the movement conservatives, the traditional group that is focused on tax cuts and trying to help out the business community. Steve Bannon, less interested in that. So, it's going to be a very difficult relationship. And in that power struggle between Reince and Steve Bannon, the winner of that tussle will affect very much Paul Ryan's prospects.
We should point out, too, that Steve Bannon has said repeatedly through Breitbart, and in his own words, that he essentially wants to blow up the establishment. He thinks that they've been too beholden to special interests and to lobbyists.
And yet, at the same time, who is Steve Bannon? He's a former managing partner with Goldman Sachs and a former executive producer in Hollywood. This is not somebody who's spent a lot of time, outside of power structures. He's been very much at the middle of this power structure, and he's benefited from it. So. Yeah.
And there are people who are already trying to oust him, and lots of Democrats and lawmakers and constituents
huge outrage over his appointment.
But so far, it's been mainly on the left.
Yes. Yeah.
There were no Republican members of Congress who stepped forward. That would be much more significant if there were Republicans who said that his pick was unacceptable. I think the belief is on the right that we're going to let the president have a fresh start, choose his people, and we'll see how that works out. If it doesn't work out well, then people will come on the right come for him.
All right. Well, we'll be talking more about that, I'm quite sure. But now let's go to Jason Stein in Madison, whom I just spoke with in a pre-recorded segment about former Congressman Melvin Laird. And now let's turn to Jason Stein of the Journal Sentinel's Madison Bureau. Jason, you wrote the obituary yesterday for Mel Laird. Melvin Laird, the former defense secretary under Richard Nixon, longtime congressman, a member of the Greatest Generation, right?
Yeah, he was one of the greater members of the Greatest Generation. I mean, really a remarkable guy and a giant in American history.
Yeah, so let me first ask you about his own war record, which, as you point out in your article, influenced how he saw his job as defense secretary. Talk about that.
Right. And not to necessarily overplay this, but he did serve on a destroyer, the USS Maddox, in the Pacific. It was it took a hit, direct hit from a kamikaze plane, and he carried shrapnel, a wound from that attack until the day he died, which was obviously yesterday in Fort Myers, Florida.
At age 94. And as you point out in your article, he was actually in favor during the Vietnam War of speeding up the withdrawals when others, including Henry Kissinger, weren't necessarily in favor of that fast of a withdrawal.
Right. And he also, so he also presided over the drawdown of more than a half million American forces out of the nation of Vietnam. And he also presided over the end of the draft, which has never returned. And I think when you talk to people close to him, that was one of the things that he was most proud of, to inaugurate, you know, this all-volunteer military force, which, you know, we have to this day.
Right. And he had an influence on a number of Republicans, from Gerald Ford on down to Colin Powell and beyond. Talk a bit about his sort of influence behind the scenes in the party after he left office.
Right. So I think a lot of people my age and younger are not going to, may know Melvin Laird's name, may not know much, if anything, about him. But obviously, you know, we would have heard of people like Gerald Ford, who he helped pick as the vice president, and he did it knowing that Ford would likely eventually replace Richard Nixon, and because of Watergate, and become the president. He helped pick Nelson Rockefeller, then, who became Ford's vice president. He helped steer a young, as you mentioned, military officer named Colin Powell into a White House position, and he even had an intern in Congress that you may have heard of. Her name then was Hillary Rodham.
Oh, that's right. And he was able to work across the aisle, too. But I'd like for you to talk a bit about his work in his old home district in Marshfield. Real advocate for health care. Talk about that.
Right. So he was, he represented the 7th district, like Dave Obey, who replaced him in that role. He was a skillful appropriator. And he worked with a Democrat in Congress to provide a lot of critical health infrastructure that we take for granted today. So together they helped build up the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Institutes of Health, and obviously the Marshfield Clinic, which is a Wisconsin institution.
Absolutely, and he has his name on a wing there, if I recall. Well, Jason, thanks so much. I want to end with a quote that Laird gave to the Journal Sentinel back in 2009 out of your article. It is, "Wars are very easy to get into, but they're awfully hard to get out of." So, Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So now I want to turn to an article that Dan Bice had in this morning's paper about Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. of Milwaukee County, who may well be on his way to Washington. Dan, Sheriff Clark has a new book coming out, and here's a quote from it. "We are at war. Homegrown radicalization has the enemy inside our borders. Islamist radicalized Americans are not criminals. They are enemy combatants." That comes from the new book, Cop Under Fire. So what's Sheriff Clark after here?
This is a book that's supposed to come out in March, and the publisher sent us an advance copy. It can change between now and then, but it's a pretty detailed chapter on what he would do if he were in charge of Homeland Security. It ends with the 7-point program. But The key thing is, he says that the federal government has been screwing up by treating Americans who might be terrorists as regular criminals. He says that we should be treating them as enemy combatants, which means that they would lose their rights to a most due process. They could be questioned without attorneys present. They could be locked up indefinitely, and their cases would be handled not by the traditional court system, but by military tribunals. So essentially, we would be taking Americans, and he says, if we believe that they're getting ready to do something, some sort of terrorist act, we should grab them, charge them as for treason, and then lock them up.
So one thing that struck me about this in reading your articles, he also calls for not a new department, but for a new entity that would report directly to the White House.
Yeah, he calls it an independent entity. He's emphasized several times, we don't have time to create a new
agency.
Is that
a police force? What is that?
The odd thing is, the Department of Homeland Security is not a small agency. It has 240,000 people in it, and has more than a dozen agencies. So you would think you could reorganize that in some way, the way he wants. And we should point out, he's been on the list of a couple of people who are being considered for Homeland Security Secretary. My understanding is he's not particularly thrilled with that because he wants to be in a more policy position. And then when you get the book, you see what sort of policy position he wants to
be
in.
So what do you think that might be?
He calls it an independent entity that would be focused on protection, not prosecution. He thinks that that people looking at possible terrorists in America are spending too much time seeing if they could establish probable cause against these people. Mm-hmm. We should just decide when we are sure that they're going to do something to go ahead and grab them. It's not very clear what it is, but he says it's an independent entity that would report directly to the White House. My guess is this would be a sort of position that he would be interested in.
Well, I think there was a Tom Cruise movie that sort of had that same plot line, but how does this stack up constitutionally?
I quoted one person, Ed Falone, who's a left-leaning constitutional scholar at Marquette, saying that this would be clearly unconstitutional, that anyone on U.S. soil has certain protections under the Constitution. I talked to a couple other prominent, nationally known figures who asked not to be quoted for this.
And conservative, liberal?
I talked to one liberal and two conservatives who said that they doubted that I could find a constitutional scholar who would say that this would be okay. But it's interesting. This is what he wants to do. And actually, he's said on air, on TV and on Fox News, that this is the direction we should go. And I should say this enemy combatant idea has been mentioned by a couple other people. Lindsey right. Graham yep. has mentioned it as a possibility for the bomber in the New York and New Jersey cases, and Breitbart's national security editor has written favorably about doing this.
And we might hear more about that. Thanks, Dan. Let's turn now to a new plan that Milwaukee Public Schools rolled out at a board meeting about a week ago. Erin Richards covered that for us, and we're going to talk to her right now. Let's check in with Erin Richards. Erin is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She covers education at Milwaukee Public Schools, and she's working on our news hub now occasionally, so we dragged her away from that. It's very busy up there to come down and talk to us this morning. Erin, MPS last week, it kind of got lost in all the election coverage, not because you didn't cover it. You did a great job covering it, but we didn't talk much about it. MPS introduced a new plan to help revamp the system. Talk about, just give me the one-minute summary of what Darian Driver, the superintendent, is proposing.
Sure. This was kind of like Darian Driver's big reveal for how we're going to do some things different in the district in a big strategic way. So a couple of those things principals and teachers had heard some rumblings about before, like making sure every school in MPS is on the same calendar. You start in August. Get permission from the state legislature to start earlier.
A little bit earlier.
Right.
Sure.
Then that September 1st sort of end of the summer vacation time. And then we end in May, and there's an optional June session for students to either catch up on credits or work ahead on additional credits. You've got the idea to have all students wear uniforms in the district as a mandatory district-wide policy.
That's a big change.
That is a big change. Some schools have them. More schools went to uniform policies this year. They seem to be very popular with parents.
Yep.
But the superintendent would honor requests from schools that don't wish to have that policy, so you could opt out. The bigger changes that nobody had really heard about yet was MPS's own plans to reform their lowest performing schools with some bigger picture treatments, if you will. So that would include giving principals much more coaching, so like side-by-side coaching in the classroom to help teachers with their instruction. And the bigger part of that would also be some potential restaffing of those schools, so shaking up the staff members at those lowest performing buildings.
All right, so pretty detailed, big plan from Darian Driver, but what's the context here? Because we've seen a lot of politics played with MPS over the years, especially in the last couple of years with the recovery district. Damon Means is out, and in, then he's out, and the legislature meets in just about a month and a half. So what is the legislature likely to do?
Right. So there is a very good reason for the timing of these proposals coming out, right? The district is trying to get ahead of the legislature convening. Republicans are in charge. We know they have an appetite for doing something to the lowest performing schools in MPS. We saw that in the last session with the introduction of the recovery district that would turn some of the district's lowest performing schools over to the county executive, and there was a, you know, sort of a that ended up being hitting a wall, essentially, because there are new report cards for schools and districts that are actually scheduled to come out tomorrow that will give us a new look at the lowest performing buildings in MPS. Those report cards were on hold last year because of a bunch of changes in the state test and the metrics for measuring school performance.
So, there's an appetite there in the legislature, but a lot of people thought MPS was sort of playing defense last year, right? Mm-hmm. And now this is sort of moving the ball the other direction. How is that likely to play with legislators, mostly Republicans, who are driving this?
So that's going to be the big question. Can MPS show that we have enough going on here, we're doing enough on our own, that you have enough other things to worry about, legislature, worry about roads, worry about infrastructure, worry about all the other aspects of state government. We've got it under control here in Milwaukee. And by the way, you know, we're one city, you guys have of the rest of the state to worry about. So the question will be, will the Republican leadership that has wanted to do something to MPS see this as a big enough step toward the district addressing its own issues? Mm-hmm. We know that the legislature is likely to look at addressing funding in this session, school funding. Walker has said that he's open to sending some more money to schools, but that could also mean more money to the private and the voucher schools and independent charter schools.
So let me ask you this. What kind of reaction did you get from Alberta Darling, the senator who was in part working on this along with Dale Koyenga, the state rep? Any response from them so far?
You know, I mean, they've both said, look, we'll look at what Darien's doing. We like what Darien is doing. They empowered her with her own ability to charter schools independently of the school board if she wishes to. That would be difficult for her to do because the school board is essentially her boss. So if she goes around them to charter schools on her own, that would sort of be flying in the face of her boss as well. So for political purposes, Dr. Driver will probably not do that. But both Koyenga and Darling have said that they would like to empower Darien further to make changes in the district. Do they mean, you know, will this be enough for them? And neither one of them are really saying on that point yet if we'll leave MPS alone because of these new proposals. You know, the Republicans are also very interested in expanding some more school choice programs in the form of these education savings accounts. That's probably likely to be a topic of discussion as well. So the big question will be, is this going to be seen as a big enough step?
Is it enough? And how quickly do you think this might be taken up by the legislature once they reconvene in January?
You know, I mean, the last session we saw the Republican leadership take on school accountability as the first item out of the gate in January. And then the Republicans themselves couldn't decide on what they were supposed to do on school accountability, in part because accountability means identifying schools that are low performing and then doing something to them, right? What should that consequence look like? Should we punish you by taking away your funding? Well, if you have a lot of poor kids who have a lot of disadvantages, taking away their funding isn't necessarily going to help that school get better. So because that was kind of a bungled first item last session, I'm not sure how quickly they're going to run out of the gate again by saying, this is going to be our signature item of the session.
And they clearly have a lot of other things on their plate.
Yes.
All right, well, Aaron, hey, thanks so much. We'll let you get back to work.
Thank you.
Well, now we're going to go to our weekly feature, Winners and Losers. I'll start with Mary Spacusa. Mary, who's your winner?
Reince Priebus, I say.
Reince Priebus, big job in the White House.
And when it looked like Donald Trump might lose, there was talk of maybe he would be ousted as RNC head. And
sort of conventional wisdom went from here to here really fast.
Right. So now, you know, right-hand man in the White House, given it'll be interesting to see how he, as we talked about, navigates Donald Trump and Steve Bannon. Yeah. So that's a tentative winner for now.
Okay. There's your tentative winner. Who's your loser or tentative loser?
You know, I think Chris Christie, who was so devoted to Donald Trump throughout this process, seems to be kicked to the curb these days.
Trump's son-in-law.
Right. By Trump's son-in-law. There are questions about Bridgegate still hovering and the closures of the bridge, and two of his aides were charged, a couple weeks ago. So, yes. So I think that Chris Christie, for all of his devotion, does not seem to be getting the payback he probably hoped for.
He prosecuted Jared Kushner's Trump's son-in-law's father, too, some years ago, which may not have been helpful at this point politically.
Probably not. I feel like that's something that sticks with somebody.
Remember the family stuff.
You do. All right, Dan, who is your loser?
And not a tentative loser. This is a real loser. Paul Nealon, who ran and lost against Paul Ryan, wanted a second chance. He said he wanted to be Speaker. I learned something this week. I had no idea. I thought you had to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker. Turns out you don't have to be. You can get 16% of the vote in an election and then run for Speaker of the House.
You, too, could be Speaker.
You could and be Speaker Vice.
And lose, and he lost even more. He lost even more badly in the House of Representatives than he did in Wisconsin. So, he is my loser of the week.
All right, who's your winner?
Giannis, and I won't even try to say Giannis's last name. The Greek freak for the Milwaukee Bucks. He gets his name checked by the president when the president's over in Greece talking up Greece-American relations. So obviously we know what Obama's doing in his final days in the White House watching a lot of NBA basketball. But I did want to mention most weeks I have an easy time coming up with losers. This week there are a lot of winners and a couple others that we should probably mention.
Yeah.
Governor Walker was named chairman of the Republican Governors Association, which is, I think, an indication that maybe he is interested in running for another term. It'll be a place that he could probably raise money and build support from other governors. And then secondly, Senator Tammy Baldwin, was named a caucus secretary, a leadership position among the Democrats in the Senate. So both of them put in positions of influence.
All right. So
Wisconsin's taking over.
Lots of Wisconsin power brokers.
Not if Steve Bannon has his say.
Tentatively.
we will see what happens. Let's take a few reader questions, and we have quite a few. We'll pick out two or three of the ones we can get to. So, Hoping on Holton Street wants to know, is there any chance that Hillary Clinton could still be made president when the Electoral College meets?
I think that's Dan? Hopeless on Holton Street.
Hopeless on Holton Street. No.
She is going to win, and her the popular vote probably by as much as 2 million votes, but no, she's not going to get the Electoral College vote.
The viewer says, his or her name is hashtag no big deal, Dan.
Okay.
This is for you.
Okay.
I read Bice's article in Sheriff Clark, the one we talked about a little bit earlier. I just cannot understand what the big deal is. Please explain why this matters.
I've written a couple of things on Sheriff Clark based on his book. One, I wrote about a conversation he said he had with the Walker's chief campaign strategist, R.J. Johnson, about his 2014 race, in which R.J. Johnson says the anecdote was fabricated.
Yeah.
So there was that. But then the second one is about Sheriff Clark's plan to shake up and overhaul Homeland Security in the United States. I thought it was important for two reasons. One, because he could very well be in charge of Homeland Security in the United States. He told CNN if he is asked to take a job in the Trump administration, he will take it. And then secondly, a lot of people consider this plan to be unconstitutional. So so you have the plan itself and then the position that he might hold.
I think anytime you're talking about stripping away people's constitutional rights, that's probably a big deal.
For American citizens anybody on U.S. soil.
Right. All right, one more and I'll handle this one. It says, one simple question. This is from Scott Z. One simple question, which I believe you will not answer. Do you wish for Donald Trump to succeed? Concede, perhaps.
Succeed.
But the question is, do you wish for Donald Trump to succeed? I'm the editorial page editor when I'm not helping out with the show, so we're paid to have opinions, and our opinion on Donald Trump has been from the beginning that he wasn't fit to be president. But he is our president now. And so I think, and our editorial board thinks, it's really important that he succeeds. We want him to put together a functioning government. The signs so far have not been good, frankly, but we're rooting for him in the sense that we need the government to work and we need parties, both parties, to try to come together and to get some things done. So that's our show for this week on politics for Thursday, November 17th. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor. We were joined by Aaron Richards, here in Milwaukee, our MPS reporter, Jason Stein in Madison, Dan Bice, our columnist for the Journal Sentinel, and Mary Spacuzza. Thanks so much, and tune in next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything you need when you shop at Menards. Spidey Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Stay connected to home while you're away with wireless outdoor security cameras. Control all your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of Spidey Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week.
Save.